Find people who can be in a community of practice or in a space of affinity that's different from the water cooler conversation where we're always venting about what's wrong. Mm-hmm. And instead of saying, this is what's wrong with the school, or this is what's wrong with everybody else, you can say, here's what I'm wrestling with. Here's what I'm trying to figure out. Here's what I wonder about. Mm-hmm. Here's why I'm thinking about this. I wonder how people are experiencing me in this way. And that sort of flipping and modeling and switching conversations and being in affinity can help one even know how to present themselves as vulnerable in order to create conditions.
Welcome to this episode of Tomorrow's Principal. I'm your host, Gene Pinkart, and I'm the Director of Practice with the Aspen Education and Society Program.
And I'm Mary Rice Booth, the Access and Equity Officer with the Leadership Academy. In this limited series, you'll hear national education leaders discuss how to understand and redefine the role of the principal as one that's doable and durable.
Meaning, we're talking about creating the role such that it doesn't always require superhuman stamina, and it becomes a role that's built for the long journey to sustained achievement and racial equity. One of our partners throughout the series is the Leadership Academy, an organization that's already building durability and doability into principal support and preparation.
We'll be drawing attention to barriers that keep principals from becoming leaders for racial equity. We will also dig into what systems are doing to eliminate those barriers and put their energy into the community aspirations and research foundations of excellent school leadership.
Paying attention to what we expect of principals and normalizing speaking about racial equity within the school system are big parts of that. To learn more about Tomorrow's Principal and the Aspen Institute, head to aspeninstitute.org/education. Hello, welcome to Tomorrow's Principal. This is a collaboration between the Aspen Education Society Program and the Leadership Academy. Our organizations came together to better understand what the role of the principal could become in order for all students to thrive. That potential of what it could become is why we call it Tomorrow's Principal. But the work starts now. Prior to today, I don't think I've ever done a recording or a panel or a presentation where three people who just got to know each other felt so connected and inspired, and we were able to have a good laugh at the same time. That was the case for today's examination of the role of the principal with Dr. Maurice Sweeney and Dr. Mary Rice Booth. Dr. Sweeney currently serves as the Chief Education Officer for Chicago Public Schools. Prior to that role, he served as the district's first Chief Equity Officer, where he examined the district's policies and programs for inequities. What I've witnessed is that Maurice came into the work with vision and has created a new way of thinking about, and more importantly, equity and quality for all students and staff at a systemic level. Dr. Sweeney is able to lead this way because his professional expertise is considerable and his experience, having been a renowned principal and administrator and a teacher prior to coming downtown, so to speak. My colleague from the Leadership Academy today is Dr. Mary Rice Booth, who serves as Chief Access and Equity Officer. She's responsible for the Leadership Academy's internal and external equity strategy, meaning that Mary is an opportunity and access machine. As part of an organization that serves 37 states, her service is to leaders who share her ambition to dismantle the inequitable practices we see at schools and districts across the nation. Dr. Rice Booth came to the Leadership Academy with more than 20 years of experience herself in education as a teacher, principal, mentor, and coach. These are two people who are doing the right work in important places, and now they help us all get a little bit smarter about school leadership. What Mary and Maurice both understand is that principals do not lead in a vacuum. Our conversation today unpacks what it means to create an ecosystem where principals can do the work that matters most. What does it mean for a school system to support tomorrow's principal? I'm your host, Gene Pinkard. I'm on the team at the Aspen Education and Society Program, where I serve as Director of Practice and Leadership. I'm glad you found time to join us, and I hope you're able to learn as much and laugh as much as I did with Maurice and Mary.
Okay, I am super excited to be here. Welcome to Tomorrow's Principal. I'm joined today by Mary Rice Booth, who is the Chief Equity Officer of our partners at Leadership Academy. Mary and I are both very excited about our conversation today with Maurice Sweeney from Chicago Public Schools. Before we bring Maurice into the conversation, I just want to say hello, Mary. It's good to see you again.
To see you too, Gene.
Anything interesting that is coming down the pike from Leadership Academy that we should be thinking about today?
I think directly connected to what we're going to hear from Maurice is the idea of, we just released our portrait of a culturally responsive school system. Recognize that, yes, that even though the center of our conversation is about the principal, but the principal is not on their own in their work, they obviously are part of a larger system. And we need the system to be in support of our individual leaders. And so we have just published that document to be able to help systems really think about how are they thinking about every part of the system, right? So we like to focus, when it comes to culturally responsive leadership, we like to focus on just the leader. We just like to focus on just beliefs or identity. It's more than that. So it's about resources. It's about structures. It's about policies. It's about hiring. It's about transportation. Right. Right. Huh? We're excited to release that to the larger field and then to also hear how that's showing up in Chicago.
Yep. And all of that incoherence is something that, Maurice, I feel like you've done great in your leadership in Chicago. Maurice joins us as the interim chief education officer of Chicago Public Schools. He has served as the chief equity officer of Chicago Public Schools as well, and is, I think, a national leader in thinking about how systems holistically support principals to make the role more sustainable, more doable. So Maurice, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. Glad to be here.
Okay, so before we get into the work that you're doing now, we would love to hear your story. What was your journey to becoming a culturally responsive leader? What called you to this moment?
So one of the ways we center equity, I really get this from the National Equity Project, is about windows and mirrors. Mm-hmm. How does one begin to interrogate their own identity? So for me, as a Black gay queer man from the South, now living in the Midwest, there is a part of my humanity that is culturally responsive and sensitive to different people, and but also recognizing that there is always work for me to do to understand people across difference. And difference can be anything from race, age, gender, gender identity, zip code, community area. And so I think it's important to understand like how a person is, how I am positioned in society in terms of my Blackness, in terms of my socioeconomic status, and use that as a way to sort of put some guardrails on what I think I understand about other people, and then spend some time making those connections to be this sort of ongoing culturally responsive person. Like, I think we in CPS, and even when we wrote the CPS equity framework, we parceled out liberatory thinking, which is about equity mindsets. When we thought about mindsets, we thought about like how that's finite, like you just sort of arrive at something, you're always there. And we realize when you're looking at equity challenges or thinking about being connected to people in culturally responsive education, it's an ongoing reflection and transformation. I would say I'm still on my journey. Been in public education 21 years now, so it's been a while. And it's an exciting journey, but every time I meet a new group of people to work with or new students, I have to sort of take a step back and say, Maurice, how do you begin to show up in these spaces as a person who is listening and attentive to other people's needs while being very honest about my own experiences and how I'm showing up?
There's something in there about like the level of reflection and your personal journey and the weight that an individual has to bring into a leadership role.
Yeah.
When we think about school leaders who are in front of a community, and maybe it's their own community, maybe it's, you know, where they grew up, or maybe they're in an entirely different city in an entirely different demographic area from one that represents their own background. Mm-hmm. What does it mean for a school leader to engage in the type of reflection that you just described about their identity, how it interacts with others, and the weight that that puts on them as a leader?
So first, as a school leader, no matter how personally motivated we are to support students and adults in schools, we are automatically centered in a position of power and influence. As much as I want to believe about myself that I am kind and that people like me, I also know that sometimes people won't tell me the truth. I recognize that as a leader, it is much more of a risk for people to sort of open up, say things about themselves or be vulnerable or, you know, talk about difficult topics without this sort of fear that the leader might make some assumptions about who they are and what their beliefs are about themselves or young people. If a person decides that they want to be a really culturally responsive school leader, it's going to take a level of vulnerability and empathy. So vulnerability is about my own self sort of showing up, saying, here is what I understand about myself. Here is how I feel like I'm showing up. here is how I might know or don't know the best solutions for something. And at the same time, showing empathy for people, giving them grace when they make mistakes, allowing space for experimentation and not always having the right answers. Mm-hmm. And so that requires, in my mind, the way I talk, the way I model forgiveness, the way I model empathy, the way I model wrestling with practices in order to let people know this can be a safe or brave space for them to do that as well. Even in like teacher observations, like there were times I would, when it was for evaluative purposes, I would tell the teacher, I was like, nah, I don't think you're ready for this one yet. So I don't want you to fail because I don't want you to fail egregiously, right? But I want you to feel like you can practice to get this right. And I feel like if I would spend the additional hour or two supporting the teacher and planning and thinking about students, then that teacher does well, then I think that sends a better message for what it means to support teachers in wrestling with these larger ideas. And not being afraid to sort of open up about what they're struggling with in their practice or in their relationships with the students they serve.
You're hitting on something that is so valuable and I think underestimated. When we talk about culturally responsive practice, and then we have this other conversation about social, emotional, and academic skills as if they're two separate things, the stuff that you just described as responsive practice and empowering people in their identities and giving a sense of agency is both of those things. And when we when we understand that, I hope that it becomes less controversial for folks and they see the integration as more manageable as well.
If I were to sort of separate those three words, culture is something that you might inherit, that you might experience, that you might observe. When I think about responsive and practices, those are things that you do. Sometimes it's like, let me learn this practice so that I can do it in my class, instead of let me be the practice that I want to see happen in other spaces to create better learning environments for young people. And so the culturally responsive practices have to be me wrestling with my own self in order to be a better service to other people, especially when you can see there is a big differences between race, class, and gender, or gender expression, or gender identity, or socioeconomic status. Sometimes they're visible, sometimes they're not. We have to begin to interrogate, like, why won't the students sit down? Maybe that's culture. Maybe it's relationship. Maybe it's the way I am showing up, the way I am teaching, right? And so I just think it's important for us to be reflective in order to do something instead of doing something and then trying to validate that we are culturally responsive. I did read the book written by the Black lady. Well, you did, you know, and it still didn't do anything. Because there was more to the book than just like reading about the book written by the Black lady.
I hear the theme of vulnerability coming through. And so I'm just curious, how do we create the conditions for a leader to be vulnerable?
That's a great question.
Especially given our current climate. Our leaders are just being hammered in everything that they do. How do we create the space for vulnerability in leadership?
I'm going to look at it from like a personal reflection. Like when I see something wrong, I always think about, am I implicated in this wrong in any way? Like, am I actually causing the harm that I don't want? I think the first step for vulnerability, if I had to sort of give it a logic model, would be to look at my own self, to ask myself when I get upset, Maurice, why are you getting upset? And not saying it is because what the other person is doing, but more about why is this hurting me to the point that I am upset and expressing it? So I think it's always like trying to turn, which can be a hard experience, but just turn a mirror on yourself to see if you can learn something about you that you don't already know. So that's one thing. The second thing, when I think for conditions, if I am situated, I think there are two ways. One, find people who can be in a community of practice or in a space of affinity that's different from the water cooler conversation where we're always venting about what's wrong. Mm-hmm. And instead of saying, this is what's wrong with the school, or this is what's wrong with everybody else, you can say, here's what I'm wrestling with. Here's what I'm trying to figure out. Here's what I wonder about. Mm-hmm. Here's why I'm thinking about this. I wonder how people are experiencing me in this way. And that sort of flipping and modeling and switching conversations and being in affinity can help one even know how to present themselves as vulnerable in order to create conditions, which I think would be, if you wanted to make it a protocol, you could do something like the Connections Protocol from the School Reform Initiative, like finding ways to protocol how we talk, how we negotiate space, how we ask questions. And mm-hmm. I actually think protocols are really, really good. Actually, the School Reform Initiative have these little cards with these phenomenal reflective questions. One of them is like, what would the least served students in your classroom say about you? I was like, man.
Yeah. It's so important to build the muscle when when these are not habits of mind and conversations that we're accustomed to having.
You know, one little tidbit is like when we want to give advice, when we like, if you ever read like a Twitter post or a Facebook post and they're like, you need to stop worrying about other people and worry about something else. And I say, what if we change you to I?
Right.
I need to stop. Personal reflection that we're projecting.
Yeah, because it actually sounds like you're worried about other people.
Yes. Yes. No, it's actually an I statement. And I'm still wrestling with this to this day. I don't want it to appear as a weakness, but I want it to appear as a sort of honest seeking to understand something else. Because sometimes you can be like, you know, I really don't know what to do. And people are like, psh, well, you're the principal, you should know. And it's like, no, then maybe there's an opportunity to say, you know, I don't really know what to do, but I think we could figure this out together. Maybe that's the thing. Mm-hmm. I'm processing with you in this moment.
I appreciate that.
So you talked a lot about kind of your own journey. I'm curious, we want to zoom a little bit out and really think about the larger ecosystem. What's your North Star in Chicago Public Schools when you think about having a culturally responsive ecosystem?
I feel like I'm sort of holding two things at once and trying to figure out how to either bring them together or figure out where do I focus on. And one is around centering communities in schools, centering families, centering needs, centering the understanding of people having desires for themselves and their communities and for economic mobility for their students in how we do school. And at the same time, recognizing that there is a critical need to pay attention to academic outcomes and performance. And so sometimes what I find in schools is like we pick one and drive one when I think both are needed. And I am wrestling with how do you actually do both in a timely manner that it gets to better outcomes for young people. I'll give you one example. Parents and students wanted a particular thing to happen. And at the time, I was like, I don't know if we have the bandwidth or capacity to make that happen for them. But recognizing that would have been something really important for that family to also have trust and buy-in in the school and also build bridges with teachers and students. And at the same time, I'm like, I am actually trying to help develop teacher practice so that they daily function as high-performing teachers in the lives of students. I think that's a huge part of culturally responsive education that we got to figure out. I wasn't the best at it.
We're all nodding our heads now because every one of us is like, I could have done that better when we look back to being a school leader.
Right. Well, that's what Glory Ladson-Billings always talks about, right? Like her tenets and right, the fact that like we always are kind of falling on one of those tenets around just kind of right, like relationships, or we just focus on academics, or we just focus on social, you know, political consciousness. But like, we're like, no, she's like, it's a three-legged stool for a reason. Right. And that we have to, you know, balance all those three. And it's not easy to do.
So to that point, like when we wrote the CPS equity framework, and we were looking at the four dimensions that we labeled the equity lens, we realized if we're missing one of those elements of the lens, so like liberatory thinking is about our mindsets, inclusive partnerships is about relationships, resource equity is like, how do you make sure people have what they need and fair policies and systems? How do you make sure some policies don't benefit some and burden others? And what we found in our development of it is like, if you miss one of the dimensions, there's a big gap in terms of solving the equity issue. Like we can do a lot of great stuff and put programs in schools and change policies. And then come to find out people are like, we didn't even want that. You know, we just did this whole thing and people are like, we didn't want the football team. We wanted the soccer team. And like, how different might it have been if we would have engaged people in what they want for themselves? Or like we can put all the resources in curriculum. We can change grading practices. We can do empathy interviews with students. But if we never wrestle with how we treat students in class, that might actually be impacting the learning experiences in the grading more than anything else. And so it is the combination of those four dimensions of the equity lens. And I think we got to look more dimensionally, which is, I think, a little bit different from the way we understand sort of white supremacy culture and the way that schools were initially built. We're like, you got to learn this stuff and then you're going to go out there and work in this industry. And that's what you do, which is very robotic, very, very linear and very sort of one, two, three. What we find is when we talk about culturally responsive education or equity, it is actually a combination of things that we have to do. And that's why I think communities of practice within schools are good, or professional learning communities where people are interrogating their identity and talking to students and looking at their practices is necessary in order to be more culturally responsive.
I've heard both of you lean into this equitable practices. For a school leader who's listening or a system that's listening, and they're thinking, well, we put a lot more Black and Brown authors into our curriculum. We've introduced more people of color into leadership positions. You guys haven't talked about either of those things. You're talking about like community engagement and rigorous instruction and helping people get into a professional learning community. How are those things part of culturally responsive practice? Because that might not be the first things that come to mind when you say culture or culturally responsive.
Yeah. When I think of like indigenous practices, tribal practices, cultural African practices, like culture is like about they and not one. Mm-hmm. And I think schools have been about one. Who is the top of the class, who has the best GPA, who can do all the assignments, who can win the award, who's the number one player. It's always centering like the singular person, and that everybody else is aspiring, or we teach people to aspire to be that person. That is what I think is hurting. And so I think what Mary and I are describing are about what are the interactions with people, not the transactions to do something that actually create more culturally responsive environments.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. Yeah.
Going back to National Equity Project, something that I really love about them is they have these lenses of oppression. The fact that like, in order for us to have this ecosystem, it's not just about I, the individual. It's not just about the interpersonal work, but it's also about the institutional systemic work at the same time. And so you have to do all those three things at the same time. So it is not just about like making sure that they our diversity in front of the classrooms and they're leading, but it's also about like, what's the system in which they're leading and how are they being treated and how are we interacting with each other? So all of those things, which is why this work is hard, right? Because it's not just about like one thing that I can do, one lever I can pull, and things are going to change.
Yeah, I was on my phone. I was looking for this quote that Kathleen from the National Equity Project sent me. It's important to not over-identify with people because it becomes a barrier to really understanding people. I had a conversation with some of my Black principal colleagues, and I said, the way we are doing this work and these in a couple of examples, I said, we're doing the same thing that was done to us as children that was harmful. And then they were also raising up like some larger institutional systemic things that I think we as a district need to continuously work on. But like, what might it be if I become not sort of exhibiting another form of oppression on my own people? Mary, to your point, like there is work for all of us to do. And I will admit that sometimes it has been hard for me to do that in white spaces because I don't want it to seem like it's this sort of casual thing when I know I need to sometimes push my white colleagues on things. And it's hard to hold, once again, holding those two things to be true can be very, very hard. But if we think about who are we serving and why, it puts us in a space of reflection and it helps us to think about who are we serving so that we don't get caught up in like the arguments with our colleagues about who they are, but it's not like, who am I and how do I show up in the world?
So let me ask you both a question. We've talked about community engagement, about reflective practice, the personal journey, about the interpersonal journey. We've talked about the academics, but we all believe instructional leadership is still a core factor here. In your constructs in Chicago and in the Leadership Academy, what would you like to see school leaders prioritize?
I just had a conversation with a group of principals last night, and I'm going to frame this in pandemic world. Mm-hmm. One, they all talked about like when things are super busy, people have told them you need to have more distributed leadership. And they gave several examples. And what I heard surfacing was, it is always appearing that the principal needs to do some sort of corrective action and the district doesn't take the responsibility or the acknowledgement about the pain of the principalship or what the pandemic and what these things have caused in the life of the principal. Before I answer that question, I want to give that as a frame to say, mm-hmm. I know principals are under a lot of pressure and extremely busy, and people who haven't lived the principal pandemic experience are telling principals what they need to do. So,
right, the meeting.
Yeah, yeah. I just want to hold that as a frame because I told my colleagues, I said, I have not been a principal during the pandemic. 3 years have gone by. I can't do that. So I hold that. What I think principals can do, let me say what district, let me give myself permission. Here's what districts can do.
Permission then granted.
Then I feel more comfortable with sort of calling out things.
That's great.
I think districts need to take a critical look at their processes, their expectations that they are putting on principals that is getting in the way of instructional leadership.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning, I cannot ask you to be an instructional leader if you are struggling to have the money to operate your school, or if you're struggling to get enough books and supplies for students.
Mm-hmm.
That is unfair to ask somebody to be culturally responsive and to be a great leader. And we haven't sort of done a lot of the resource equity and policy work necessary. However, I do know that there are superstars, principals who have figured out how to navigate those spaces.
Mm-hmm.
And there are newer principals who are trying to figure it out. So what I would say is always lead with vulnerabilities to encourage the staff to open up, to lift up what they're struggling with so they can problem solve and build solutions together. And then the second thing, I think good culturally responsive leaders, no matter what the environment is, should center the voices of youth, especially those farthest from opportunity. So here is what I learned when I looked at my data at different times. One, Black boys weren't doing well in my school, or more toward the end of the year, they were doing far better than other student groups. My Latinos were not doing as well. So I brought in a group of Latino students into a space and I said, hey guys, like, tell me what's happening in your student experience. And their responses were two things that stood out besides like relationships that I think come up all the time. They were like, we were happy that over the years you started a football team, but we like soccer. And so we want after school activities that are about us and our culture, right? And I was like, man, what a misstep. I was thinking like, yeah, everybody wants to play football. Yeah. And they said that you all told us you had this program and it's not fully functional. I was like, man.
Wow.
And guess what? We were trying to have it and then the budgets got cut and we didn't have it.
But kids will tell you.
Yes.
Kids will tell you.
Yes, they will. Yeah.
And they might tell you about you or me about you. That has to be
okay. They don't hold back. The only thing I would add to that, I think those are incredibly important pieces for the system as well as the leader to do. I would say at both levels, I think is to interrogate every decision that you're making.
Yes.
Always asking yourself, who is being left out by my decision? Who is being harmed by my decision? And I think that's just also critical because I think as leaders, we forget how many decisions we make in an hour, in a day, and the impact of all of those decisions. So if we are interrogating, thinking about every decision that we're making, we're able to take a slow down and really think about the impact and who's being left out by every decision that we make.
I love that.
Oh, that's so good. That's so good. Which means that we also have to create time in our calendar to even have reflection.
Yep.
It's true. Color code it. That's what I do.
I do too. Yes. Because then I can look at a glance and see how I'm spending my time and what I don't have for myself.
So as we close out our conversation, I'd love to hear, what's our call to action? What do we want to see when we think about culture responsive ecosystems?
When we created the CPS equity framework, one of the questions that evolved was like, how does someone open up the framework and start to take their own journey? So that if you had to do it alone or with others. To start the ecosystem, we think it is a part of really what we call the CPS equity curve, which is about coming to this work curious, with a sense of urgency, resiliency, vulnerability, and empathy, which is about like, how do I set myself up to even engage in any of this? And we think without those sort of dispositions, it will be more difficult. Like if you don't have empathy for young people and for people across difference, you're going to struggle with sort of being culturally responsive. If you don't understand that there is a sense of urgency, that education is time bound and years can go by, there might be something. So I think this is sort of my own personal niche or reflection. You've got to first show up as somebody who is curious. It just has to be the way, because if not, it will become transactional. And then I think you can move from there and sort of think about what is the equity challenge we're actually trying to solve in this particular situation so that you sort of take your dispositions and come to a sense of purpose and then move into how do we set goals? How do we listen? How do we interrogate? before it even comes about anybody else. I think that is important. And then the ecosystem, I would ask, how does one see how people are positioned toward those goals or toward that purpose or toward those outcomes to recognize the way we support people and help people will be different? You might find that we have to help support people differently across race. And so that means the PD might be different, or it might be the same with some areas that allow people to sort of do their internal reflection in order to be of greater service. That's where I'm stuck there, y'all. I'm stuck. I can't even push into ecosystem right now, except for like understanding the landscape and taking a pause and a step back to see what's in front of us.
Mary, I want to ask you the question that you just asked Maurice. This has been incredibly powerful and impressive. So grateful for the work, Maurice, that you're leading in Chicago. Mary, what's resonating with you is the call to action?
Well, first of all, I love the curve, because I just feel like it just says so much about what a leader needs to do. And it's not just about like what's the knowledge that a person has, but how are you actually showing up every day and the behaviors and emotions that are connected to that. So I just want to show appreciation for that framework. And I think our frameworks that we use at Leadership Academy, similarly, it makes me think about our equity leadership dispositions, which similarly just starts with the point of like, I need to be able mm-hmm. to know myself, integrate myself, be vulnerable, take a step back. But as a leader, you can't just do that. Like that work is ongoing, but you also have to push to think about you're making decisions, you're acting every day. You're also coaching and building capacity of other people. And then the work actually then happens when you're actually dismantling the policies and procedures that are actually getting in the way and creating new ones, right? So those are kind of our six dispositions. A leader needs to hold on to those from the school superintendent, chancellor, school board, all the way to the teacher and the teacher leader. And if we're able to have all those folks holding on to that and working in conjunction, then we can actually potentially have an ecosystem that's actually designed for the students that are coming into our school doors every day.
I love that, Mary. You know, Maurice, you are the ecosystem. You're sitting in a senior leadership position with this awareness exactly. of the individual identity that principals bring into the role, that students bring into their classrooms, challenging your own system to be as holistic and integrated, as coherent in responding to the experiences that they're having so that they're not getting these directives from all over the place. And equity is not a checkbox or this office off to the side. Equity is instruction. Equity is relationships. Equity is reflective practice. And so for me, that's the call to action, is that it's not set aside. It's actually an integrated experience.
I'll leave with this sort of random thought. There is no other place that I can think of where people have more social interactions than a school, where hundreds of people are coming together for hundreds of days at a time to have mm-hmm. hundreds of interactions. The only two closest places in my mind are nursing homes and prisons. Mm-hmm. If there is any time that we need to make sure we support principals and support them in their organizations or their organisms within these communities, is mm-hmm. right now.
Now more than ever. There's nothing like it. Well, Maurice, again, we are so appreciative. Chicago is lucky to have you. Again, we have been privileged to listen to the passion and leadership and empathy of Maurice Sweeney. He is the interim chief education officer of Chicago Public Schools. Thank you, Maurice. Mary, it's been great seeing you and talking to you again as well.
Good to see you both.
This was a great opportunity. When I saw this, I thought, this is a moment to pause and to reflect.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Tomorrow's Principal. Don't forget to leave a rating and review on your podcast app so that more people like you can easily find this podcast.
We'd also love it if you shared it with a colleague who would find value in this episode. To learn more about Tomorrow's Principal and the Aspen Institute, head to aspeninstitute.org/education.